Juliet Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello and welcome to episode 63 of Dogcast Radio. If I don't sound quite normal, it's because I've caught the virus that caused Jenny to lose her voice. The good news is that Jenny's back with today's joke, and hopefully I'll soon be back to normal too. In the meantime, please bear with me. Crafts is the focus of today's show. We'll be hearing about dog activities.
It's the most fun that you're going to have with your dog. It's absolutely an incredible time with your dog, and dogs get so addicted to it.
The problem of keeping your dog clean.
My dog Lulu loves to run and play in the park, and I was literally having to physically pick her up and carry her into the bathroom to wash her paws every time I came home.
And dog breeds on the wane.
I believe there was only 70 of them registered last year, so they're unfortunately an endangered breed.
But before all that, we have an interview with an owner preparing a dog for the show ring. As you walk around many of the Crufts rings, what strikes you is the frenetic grooming going on. One white standard poodle, who was being prepared to be shown, particularly caught my eye. Her hair on her head was being thoroughly combed, and most of it flopped forward, obscuring her face. It was gradually being combed back and upright, and she sat there, obviously unconcerned about what was going on. I went and had a word about the grooming process.
Underneath all this hair, what do we have?
We have, She lives a normal dog's life. She catches rabbits and she does obedience as well. Yeah. And we're doing quite well in our obedience as well as showing. So I'm hoping she'll be the first standard poodle dual champion. So, that's what we're working on. Yeah. She's got her breed titles. We've just got to work on her obedience title now.
Is this actual back combing?
Sort of. You try and get a lot of air in it. Rather than back comb it, you try and just comb it up gradually and spray it up rather than sort of back comb it, because it uses more hair up to flattens it. So,
now is this the equivalent of this? This is making me think sort of a canine Amy Winehouse.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. She'd have a brilliant top knot, would. Yes. Yes.
And on an average day, how much time would you spend grooming? Obviously not as much as for a show, but I mean, how much time does grooming take?
Well, when she's not showing, I keep her in oil. Yes. So just once or twice a week when she's in oil.
What does that mean, in oil?
Well, I use...
So it's a spray...
Yeah, it's for afro hair, which is very similar to theirs, because they don't molt. It mats really easy. Yeah. So we have to wash all this out when we get home, and then I put her all in oil. And it stays mainly mat-free, but you can put a wide comb through it, and it'll be, you know... For that maintenance, so she can run around and be as mad as she likes, which she is usually.
Now, having said that, she's lying there as good as gold, being groomed.
Well, they're brought up to it, really. They just get used to it as puppies, and they quite enjoy the attention. She'd much rather be on here than sat in there waiting. Yeah. So she does enjoy it.
And what's that spray that's going on there?
Hairspray.
Is that contraband or is that allowed?
It's not.
Okay, we won't mention any names.
Yes. But nobody else can have their hair, dog's hair up without. I mean, you can't stick it up like this with water, which is all you're allowed to use. But everybody uses it, so...
Yeah. So do they patrol and sort of look for that?
Well, they can test you. Yeah. So it is a gamble. They can... the wind blew that way. They can come and test you at any time. They just take a piece of hair and test it. So, and then you get...
Yes?
And you get banned, I think. So,
and And you said you're working on, you want to be the first, well, you want her to be the first standard poodle dual champion.
Yeah.
So what titles does she have, you know, in showing or obedience?
She's already a champion in breed.
Yeah.
She was a champion by the time she was 20 months old. And she's through the first two classes in obedience. The obedience takes a lot longer and it's a lot harder. It's my other dog, he's nine, he works Championship C, but he didn't get made up as a breed champion, but he was my first standard poodle, so we're working on it with her instead, seeing as she's already got one title. So you have to win a CC to be able to come and work in the championships here.
In the obedience?
Yes.
So you've got to have been a show dog?
In the obedience, you have to have won through all the classes and then won Championship C just to be able to come and work your dog in the championships. Like in the breed, you just get third to qualify at certain shows. Yeah. In the obedience, it's a lot harder. I mean, today's the team event, though, and that is they choose you for that. You get picked for the team. They do all the classes, and he's been four times in the team, but we didn't go for it this year because it's the same day as our breed. So
And how what time is your class? How long have you got left?
We're in open, so it'd probably be there's one more class, and then I'm in. So.
Not that long, no. We'll leave you to your printing.
Thank you.
Thank you, best of luck.
Thank you.
It was fascinating to see the dog emerging from beneath all that hair. Of course, a bad hair, or fur day, is not what you want at Crufts, and it seems some owners go to great lengths to keep their dog's coat in good condition. I spotted a Yorkshire Terrier who looked as if he was having a visit from a mobile hairdresser. Just like the poodle, though, he was very relaxed about the process.
It looks to me as if you're sort of putting paper curlers into the dog. So what are you actually doing?
It's not curlers, it's paper to protect the coat, to stop it breaking and to make it more comfortable for the dog as well, because they do not like to have their hair... Oops, he's falling asleep. They do not like to have their hair down anyway, so as soon as they finish, we put them up, like you will put yours in a ponytail or... It's exactly the same. It's just to protect the hair, and we put oil as well to nourish because they got a silky hair, so to stop them breaking as well.
So does he spend most of his time with these?
He's always like that. We do them every day, and they're always in a paper when they're at home, and we just take them off, wash them. Well, we wash them every week, but we just get them ready when they go to the show. Yes, so.
And does he mind at all?
No, they do like it. They get used to it from a very young age, and they do prefer to have their hair rather than to walk on them, because they will walk on them, they won't be able to eat because they will go in their mouth. So it's more comfortable, really.
And do you have to redo them every day?
Yes. It's better for the coat. Yeah. It makes more sense, yeah. Yes, and they do even have a little coat to put on the top. To protect as well, so the stopping the rubbing if you decide to have a little rub, and a little socks as well.
Does he sleep like that?
Yes, as I say, it's like if you put your hair in a plait or ponytail or bun or anything like that. It just wrapped.
And where have you travelled from?
Today from Surrey, Sutton. Yes, I'm French but I live in England, and the dog is German. To make it more confusing.
To see photos of both the poodle and the Yorkie, visit dogcastradio.com, where there are photos of most of the dogs and people mentioned in today's show. Another small dog caught my eye, this time one with a rosette, so I went to have a chat about what she'd won.
We got reserve in the postgraduate class bitch.
And what does that mean?
That means that if first, second or third for some reason gets disqualified, she'll automatically go up. And if you get first, second or third in any of the classes, then you automatically qualify for next year's Crufts. So obviously try and get the sort of top placings to try and guarantee yourself a qualification for next year.
And postgraduate, what does that mean?
Basically, it's any dog that hasn't won more than four firsts at open shows. So obviously what happens is if you keep on winning at championship shows, then you have to keep on going up at the classes. So she's only got one first in a previous championship show, so that meant that she could go into postgraduate. And what you do is you tend to go up through the ranks. So say the puppy is up to 12 months, junior is up to 18 months, then you have special yearling up to 24 months. But then after that, it's how many you win as to which class you go into, how experienced the dog is and how well it's done.
Right, okay. So does that make any sense? Yes, yeah, yeah. And what breed is she?
She's a long coat chihuahua.
So she's a very small dog.
She's 3.5 pounds.
Yes. Okay, so what are the advantages and disadvantages of having such a small dog?
I mean, the main thing is breeding. There's a big problem with breeding. When they're so small, you can have a lot of problems if you try and breed with them, because obviously their pelvises are very small. And what can happen is obviously the bitch can't actually push the puppy out, and obviously they can sort of have problems and have to go for cesareans and so forth. The other common problems in chihuahuas is luxating patellas, which is just because they're so small, they're sort of patellas, it's sort of common in the breed. And the other thing is hydrocephalus, water on the brain, where they have two big heads.
Yeah. So now the patella is the knee?
The kneecap, yeah. And the other thing about chihuahuas is you have, sometimes they have an open molara, which is like a little bit in the skull which hasn't fused. And what happens there is, I mean, it's common in the breed, but you have to be careful. They suggest you don't have chihuahuas for very small children, because if you drop them, they would hit directly onto their brain and actually kill them outright. So, you know, that's another thing that can happen with the toy breed and the big heads, because obviously that's the breed standard.
Yeah. That then, if you, as long as you're careful with them and maybe don't have very small children with them, can they sort of live, for want of a better word, you know, a normal doggy life?
Definitely, absolutely. I mean, we take them out for walks, they go romping about in the garden. I mean, we have ours, although we show them, they're completely like in our home. We don't keep them out in kennels or anything. They're all in the lounge and jumping up and down on the sofa and, you know, doing the usual doggy things.
Yeah.
So no, not at all. And in fact, although she's the smallest one we've got, she's probably got the biggest personality, you know.
You often find that, don't you?
you do. So no, there's no difference at all in any other dog. They love their walks, they love their, you know, fresh air. They do their doings where they shouldn't, and you know, all the usual doggy stuff.
Yeah. And how many do you have?
We have six. We've got three bitches, and we just had three puppies recently. Well, they're 4.5 months now, so not so recently.
But do you have them all here with you?
No, we haven't. We've only got two of them here today, because only two of them have qualified.
Yes.
The other bitch that we used to have the litter with, she's slightly bigger, and we deliberately did that so that we didn't have problems when she bred, because we didn't want to have any, you know, nastiness.
Not all of the dogs are at Crufts to be shown, and some were there because they have a very special ability. They can detect cancer. We met Claire Guest back in episode 48 of Dogcast Radio, when the charity Cancer Dogs UK was just starting out. I asked about the progress they'd been making.
Well, we've been making some good progress. We've now got some premises for training, and we have now the go-ahead to start on a new project looking at prostate cancer. So we've been very, very lucky. Patients at Buckinghamshire NHS hospitals at Stoke Mandeville and High Wycombe have been asked when they come into hospital if they're willing to give a sample. And these samples have been kept for us, so the dogs are going to be able to be trained now to see whether we can identify the odour of prostate cancer from urine. So that project's about to start. And in addition to this, we've actually trained the first hyperglycemic detection dog. So that dog is actually working with a gentleman now, and she's alerting him when his blood sugar starts to drop.
So that's for diabetes?
Diabetes. He had a very poorly controlled diabetes, and he was going into a coma, you know, danger of going into coma a couple of times a week, and was collapsing. So we've trained the dog to identify when his blood sugar starts to drop in enough time that it gives him warning that he's able to eat something and raise his blood sugar. So it's all very exciting.
I was reading about that, and there was one lady saying that the dog indicated a drop before the actual blood test indicated that the blood sugar dropped.
Yes, that I don't know. In our dog at the moment, what we're doing is we're only rewarding the dog when we actually see a slight change in the blood. Change in the blood, but we're hoping that the dog's going to be detecting when his blood drops to about four, And at the moment she's picking up at about height 3.8, so it's very difficult with the dogs because you're never sure whether they're actually picking up very, very early signs or actually whether they're false positiving, and that's what you have to be a little bit careful of because obviously they're very clever. So what we tend to do is actually look for some evidence that the blood sugar is coming down, which is quite easy to spot because if you take it once and then take it again, you know, very quickly, then you can see this it started to drop. So yeah, so.
And then that gives him enough time to.
Yeah. As long as he gets warned before he drops to about 2.5, he's got plenty of warning. So yeah. Sorry, my dogs are.
and with the cancer detection, so you're working sort of with hospitals.
Yes, working very, very closely with the Bucks NHS Trust, Stoke Mandeville and High Wycombe Hospital. And we're really lucky that they're working with us because without them we wouldn't be able to do the work we do. So.
And so sort of how, I mean, is it? Can you imagine a point where this is actually going to be sort of put into use, or are we a long way from that yet?
With the hyperglycemic dogs, obviously that's something that's happening now. People are having we're training these dogs for people. With the cancer detection work, we're looking at a very different type of project. Don't envisage that there'll be dogs placed with individuals that, you know, to see whether they're going to develop cancer in their lifetime. What this work's going to do, we're going to work with the scientists to try and identify the odour of cancer. I think in time this will lead actually to a machine being made with software which will actually mimic the dog's nose. So perhaps in the future, in 15 years' time, we will all give urine samples, and those urine samples will be put into an electronic nose that will actually screen us for certain types of cancer.
And the two dogs that you got with you today, tell us about them.
I've got Daisy and Tangle. Tangle's the sort of old star. He was on the first bladder cancer project that was published in the BMJ, and he's worked up to levels of 86% since that time. Yeah, Daisy's been in training for about 10 months, and she is now getting into the advanced stages, so she's now doing advanced discrimination, and both these dogs will go on to the prostate cancer work as well, so they're both ready really to get going. So we just need funds, it's like all charities, we need funding.
Now you've just been doing a demonstration with them, so can you tell us something about that?
Yeah, I mean, today obviously for this environment it's a very, very easy discrimination because you know the dog has to be able to concentrate just like we do, and also you have to have an environment where the air is not moving and changing. So today it was just a choice of two. One is from a patient without cancer, the other is a patient with cancer, and both dogs obviously quite clearly identified the patient with cancer quite easily. So yeah.
I know they've been training a while, but how long does it take them before they get to that point?
I've just trained a dog, and he was at this point within 4 months. So, and his accuracy rates are quite high. So, I'm sort of able to fine tune the training really, and also I've worked out which bits really don't make any difference and which bits are the important bits. I think about a dog could be trained within about 4 months. I'm fairly discriminate. Yeah.
I spoke to Claire Guest again the following day in connection with some of the breeds that the Kennel Club is worried are becoming less popular. Claire was at the Organipet stand, where one of the UK's best dog foods was celebrating the best of British.
She's a curly-coated retriever.
Yeah.
And I believe there was only 70 of them registered last year, so they're unfortunately an endangered breed, and they are fantastic, old, traditional breeds, so it's a real shame that they've been forgotten.
Yeah. Intelligent, because you've trained her as a cancer detection dog.
Well, actually, the jury's out because she's in training.
Ah, right, okay. So she may be intelligent.
She's certainly intelligent. She's as a breed, they're much more. She is certainly very laid back about things, and obviously that may help the work I'm doing because the dogs need to be very calm about the work they're doing. But I mean, time will tell as to whether or not she's sort of got what it takes. But yeah. Quite hopeful.
and how much time are you spending with her?
She comes into training at the moment 5 days a week now, but she only does fairly short sessions, so obviously she's got a long way to catch up, Daisy and Tangle, but yes.
She's beautiful. She's sort of like a Labrador with a perm, isn't she?
Yes, I mean, most people, that's the other strange thing, actually, that most people think she's a Labrador cross poodle, which of course is a new crossing.
Yeah.
And it seems very, very sad that people are forgetting the old traditional breed and assuming that she's this new crossbreed, which is really strange. But yeah, she's a very very typical curly coat, I think.
Yeah, she's beautiful. And now, last time we spoke to Liz,
yeah,
with OrganiPets, you were on the brink of sort of making it big, weren't you? And you sort of were still coping at home. So what's going on with OrganiPets?
We're now in over 70 Waitrose stores, over 100 independent retailers, about 50 internet sites. We have moved into proper offices.
Yay!
Very exciting.
Yes.
We have staff. We have salespeople. So yeah, it's gone from when we last met. It's That's hugely fun. Increased.
Very quickly.
Yeah.
Yes.
I
was going to say it's sort of 6-7 months then, and
it's moved on. We've also been named the UK's number one pet food company by the Good Shopping Guide, which we're really excited about.
Yeah.
And last week, a pretty well-known vet in London, Richard Bleckman, said that we're the best commercial pet food he's ever come across. So we're getting some really good feedback now. Really exciting.
Yeah. No, I mean, obviously the proof of the pudding is in the eating, and it's definitely with that, with the food. And your rescue dog Raffi, who was diagnosed with terminal cancer, wasn't she? And so the food was developed for her needs. So tell us how Raffi is.
Raffi's really well. She's now 15, so she's an old lady, but she's going well. She's still running in the fields and enjoying life. So we're really pleased.
So don't wait for the problems to develop. Put them onto OrganiPets now.
Absolutely. Good, pure food.
It's great to hear that Raffi is still doing so well. Lots of organisations were represented at Crufts, one being Dogs for the Disabled, and they had a very special message to get out. We spoke to Chief Executive Peter Gorbing.
2008 is the year of the assistance dog, and during the year we're aiming to really promote the whole concept of assistance dogs and what they do to help people who have a range of disabilities. So we're talking about guide dogs, hearing dogs, other kind of dogs that help physically disabled people. We want to draw to people's attention the reality that our assistance dog owners do have access rights under law to be able to take their dogs into public places. And we want to try and encourage as many service providers as possible to recognise that they do have access rights and to honour those access rights. And we're encouraging people to come to us and talk to us about those rights and what we can do to help them. And as part of the year, we're having Dog Star Awards, where we are rewarding those organisations that are doing outstanding service in supporting assistance dogs into their premises.
And you've mentioned a little bit, but what are the range of them? What is an assistance dog?
Well, an assistance dog really is a dog that helps someone who has some kind of disability. So probably most people are very familiar with guide dogs for the blind. They help people who are visually impaired. Hearing dogs for deaf people, they train the dogs to help people who have a hearing impairment, so they alert people to sounds that they may hear. Because if you're deaf, you may not know that someone's at your front door. But if the dog comes to attract you and take you to the front door, then that helps you to do that. And then there are other kind of dogs that actually help people who are physically disabled, quite often wheelchair users, to do things like open and close doors, activate alarms and switches, pick things up that people drop. Because you imagine if you're in a wheelchair and you've got very little bodily movement, you may drop your pen 100 times a day. And actually, do you want to have to ask someone to pick it up for you all the time? Not really. But a dog will happily retrieve it, because particularly if you're using dogs like retrievers, it's just their natural instinct. So it just allows people to live their daily lives far more independently and not have to rely on other people to help them with everything. And that's really the role of the assistance dog, to give people greater independence in their lives.
Yeah. I mean, one of the nice things, we've had quite a few assistance dogs in this morning, and although they do these amazing things, they remain a dog. I was watching one golden retriever over there, and somebody was getting papers out of a folder, and there was a rattle, and he was like, oh, is that food? And his head went up. But they're definitely still dogs, aren't they?
Yeah, and that's very important to all assistance dog organisations, that these dogs do tremendous job of work for their owners, but they are dogs, and it's really important that they enjoy the same things that every dogs do. And all the owners of these dogs, they'll take the dogs regularly free running. The dogs have a wonderful life, and I think you said yourself, but if you see some of the dogs when they're working, their tails are wagging. Dogs love working. That's what that's what they were meant for. So in many ways, assistance dogs are very often using dogs to do the things that they come naturally to them, and they love it.
Yeah. I bet they don't get bored, do they?
No, they certainly don't get bored. There are lots of things going on all the time. And actually, that's really good, because one of the things I think a lot of dogs do get a bit bored, because they're probably not mentally stimulated. We tend to think we need to walk dogs a lot, and of course dogs do need exercise, but dogs need mental stimulation as well. And assistance dogs get plenty of mental stimulation because there's things going on around them all the time that they can get involved with. Yeah.
But I think we do project that human thing of, I like to veg out on the couch, you know, the dog will. And people have sort of said, oh, guide dogs, they don't have a proper life. And you think, no, they do. And do you know as well, they have a healthy life, they get the proper health care, they're groomed properly. I mean, these people are very dependent on those dogs. It's not just, I mean, even a pet dog you have a close relationship with, but these have even closer, don't they? So.
Well, absolutely right. And we're very conscious with organisations that are involved with assistance dogs that we do have rights, we do have legal rights to take these dogs into public places. But we recognise that with those rights we have responsibilities as well. And that means that actually we do make sure that these dogs are in absolute tip-top condition at all time, and they go through regular health checks, they're vaccinated and wormed and as and when they need to be. And so that actually the dogs are in really good working condition, so that actually they're no danger to members of the public. And that is very important. And as I say, that balance between rights and responsibilities is something that all assistance dog partnerships take very seriously.
Well, the best of luck with 2008.
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.
Cheers.
It's hard to believe that in 2008, people with assistance dogs can still encounter prejudice against their dogs. But it does happen. So it's wonderful to have a whole year to highlight their work. Another group of dogs who are allowed access to places most pet dogs can't go are Pets as Therapy, or PAT dogs. We met two beautiful PAT dogs who help share the benefits of interacting with a dog to those in hospitals, old people's homes and other institutions. One of the dogs was a huge Pyrenean Mountain dog, and we had seen a Great Dane therapy dog at Crufts too. So what's the reason for choosing such big breeds?
Yes, it's the temperament, exactly. The dogs that are chosen for the PAT dogs, the temperament has to be perfect. That's what it boils down to. So nice, quiet, subdued dogs that are prepared to give a lot of loving to the patients or the individuals that you meet. And as you can see, hopefully that is the case with all the ones we have been displaying today. Obviously the big dogs do attract a lot more attention, but certainly... I'd say essentially there's more smaller dogs than big dogs within the groups that we have.
What you find is that the small dogs are ideal, certainly if you've got patients with disabilities, because they can sit on their laps sometimes. With larger dogs, it's much easier for the patients to reach.
Yes.
With a medium-sized dog like a Wheaton, you've often got to work out a way of making sure that the dog can get to the patient without jumping on them, because they're too big to go anywhere near them, obviously. And Pets as Therapy dogs are not supposed to jump up with anybody. So ideally, you know, you've got to work something out. But large dogs, ideal for somebody who maybe can't bend down, can't reach over, the elderly, the infirm, the disabled. And it's great because they can touch them, they can feel them, and they can see them as well, which is the other thing that you've got to look for.
Yeah, they tend to make a big impact, obviously, in the schools and such like, where if the children see them as the larger dog. But equally, children love all animals in any event, so small or large. But I know when he's been into the schools at home, to see the faces light up or the jaws drop, which way it goes, then it's certainly nice to see the impact they have.
I was going to say, what sort of environments do you go into?
All sorts. We've got hospitals, daycare, residential care. We work with people with phobias, stroke people who suffered strokes, oncology wards in hospitals, a wide variety of places and establishments that we go into. And over 100,000 people every, you know, around the UK are benefiting from visits from PAT dogs, which is the great thing.
Oh, yeah.
Of all ages, that's the important thing to say.
And for you, it must be so rewarding to give something back.
You see a smile come across somebody who can hardly move because they've maybe suffered a severe stroke and they've lost a lot of mobility. And to put their hand on a dog and a smile come on the face is often the only change to the facial expression in the whole day. It's worth £1 million. It really is.
If you'd like to see the owners we were talking to there, along with their dogs, there's a photo on the Dogcast Radio site. Another organisation at Crufts was the National Dog Warden Association. I went and asked them about what their job really entails. Whenever you watch a children's cartoon or anything, the dog warden is always the evil figure that sort of traps dogs. What do you actually do as a dog warden?
Well, our main job is to really promote responsible dog ownership. So we do a lot of proactive work. We go out and speak to schools, speak to dog groups, about people, about, you know, keeping their dog under control, ensuring it's correctly identified, not allowing it to stray or cause a nuisance, and things like microchipping and neutering. We also, of course, go out and pick up any stray dogs that are on the street, take them back, keep them safe for the 7 days, and if they're not claimed, then we rehome them. Well, that's what we hope to do.
Yes. So it isn't just about trapping and catching?
No, very much not so. I mean, it's every council is different, every council has different responsibilities, but we're very much about promoting, as I say, responsible dog ownership and making sure that dogs and people can live together happily.
So it's almost sort of a lot like prevention is better than cure, isn't it?
Very much so. So it's, we really try to do the proactive work, education, the dog owners and the other people on the street as well, educating children in schools about how to approach dogs, what to do if they see a dog, so that you can prevent any kind of, you know, future bad things happening, basically.
And is there a website that people can go and have a look at?
Yes, there's the National Dog Warden Association website, which is ndwa.org.uk. And from there, they can find out who their local dog warden is, and it's got lots of information on there as well. Of course, you can also go to your local council website, and there should be the information on there too.
You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Back to Crufts now, and we caught up with Chris from what used to be Alfie's Lost Terriers, but they have a new name.
Well, the new website address is www.alfieslostdogs.com. And the reason we changed that was actually because it was Alfie's Lost Terriers, we thought people thought we were only related to lost terriers. So we've actually changed it now to make sure that it's all lost dogs.
And even more than that, the site isn't just lost dogs, is it? So there's more to it. So tell us what else we can find there.
You can find, we actually on the site, we mainly do lost and found dogs, but we also do dogs in need, dogs that are looking for homes. We also do petitions, and we do welfare, and we also do public awareness, which is about issues such as fur trade, the meat trade, all relating to anything to do with dogs, greyhounds, the welfare of greyhounds as well. So we cover quite a wide spectrum of issues.
So it sounds a very caring website.
It is very caring. It's all volunteers. It's all people putting in their own time and their own money and their own effort, all for the welfare of dogs and for the owners of the dogs that have lost their dogs.
And can you tell us about perhaps one of the dogs that, and owners that you've reunited?
Well, we had a Staffordshire Bull Terrier called Ice that was missing from Birmingham. She actually had been stolen, and she'd been gone 11 months, and the owners were actually giving up. They didn't think they'd ever see her again. And we had a dog, someone put a dog onto the site saying they'd found a white Staffordshire Bull Terrier in Essex. It was at a vet's, and we thought, hang on, this could well be Ice. So we made inquiries with the vet. The vet sent us photographs, sent the photographs to the owner. The owner said, yes, I think it's Ice. And they actually made the journey, 150 miles from Birmingham, down to Essex to be reunited with Ice, which was really, really emotional and really great. And she is now one of our moderators. She's joined us as a moderator, as a helper. And the dog was reunited. Sadly, it had been through a rough time, and it's had to get over the trauma of that, but it's now back to being the loving family pet that it was before it went missing. But we have a lot of really good reunited stories that are really great, and it makes it all worthwhile, actually, because every time you get a dog back and you see that happiness, that's what keeps us all going. And when we have a dog that needs a home, that's in rescue, about to be put to sleep, because we had Buddy, who was actually 1 hour from death when I went to the kennels. And I said, I rang up the other co-owner of the site, which is Justine. And I said, I have a dog here, it's going to be put to sleep in an hour. Can we do anything? And we took it, and it's now been nursed back to health, and it's happily living with Justine now, the owner of the site.
Excellent. Well, best wishes with Alfie's Lost Dogs.
Alfieslostdogs.com. Thank you.
I was so impressed with the attitude of Chris and her colleague Jenny from Alfie's Lust Dogs. They are totally committed to getting owners and dogs back together, as well as many other dog welfare causes. Heaven forbid either of our dogs is ever lost or stolen. But if they are, the people at Alfie's Lust Dogs are exactly the compassionate, supportive people I would want to turn to. The site is lucky enough to have a resident vet, Julien Poublon. He was too busy treating animals at his surgery to get to Crufts, so we caught up with him on the phone about both Alfie's Lust Dogs and his own innovative site.
Well, my contribution is to answer questions to anybody who's posting a question on the Ask the Vet section in Alfie's Lost Dog. Basically, what happened was that Justin Marlowe, who's the founder of the website Alfie's Lost Dog, is basically, I'm basically a vet. She'd asked me whether I would spend a bit of time to help with the website. And since it was for a good cause, I thought that I could provide that help. So that's how it started, and I've been answering sort of one or two questions a week for about a year now.
Oh, right. And so you were Alfie's vet?
That's right.
Right, right. And I have to ask you this in connection with that. So presumably you are supporting Vets Get Scanning?
Absolutely. Actually, that's, funnily enough, I came across Vet Get Scanning in a slightly different way. I went to Crufts last year, and I came across their stand. Okay, they had the combined stand with, I believe, I can't remember.
It was Dog Theft Action.
Dog Theft Action, absolutely, yes.
Yeah,
and they needed help on the stand, so they allowed me to put some leaflets for my own website, providing that I would give them help, and we met in this way. But I understood later on that they were sort of a good friend with the Justin Marlowe and the people dealing with Alfie's Lost Dog.
Yes, yeah, but again, a very good cause.
Absolutely, it's a very good cause. It's absolutely charitable. There's no advertising on the website. It's all for the dogs, and therefore, really, there was nothing to avoid me to help them.
Yeah,
I'm very happy to do so.
Yeah, smashing. Now, as you say, you have your own website, Vetstoria, and I've had a look at it, and it's fascinating. So, tell us, what can people find at Vetstoria?
Right. So, a year ago, precisely, 1st of March 2007, we went live with Vetstoria, with a colleague and friend of mine, who's also a veterinarian. And basically, we produce veterinary informative videos. So, short video clips of, 4 to 8 minutes, where we're going to deal with a specific disease affecting sort of all kinds of animals, ranging from rabbits, horses, cows, and obviously our pets, dogs and cats. Our latest video, I believe, is about myxomatosis in rabbits.
Mm-hmm.
We will deal with various topics that can be informative and educative for the general public, as well as sometimes presenting what's going on behind the scenes at the vet.
Right.
So there's a few videos for the people who can watch that sort of thing about surgeries, for example.
Yeah, yeah. I have to say, I watched the myxomatosis one, but then I had a look at one of the dog ones, and I had a look at the tetanus clip. And it's a fantastic resource because, if you are having a problem and you sort of worried about whether do I know the symptoms or has my dog or animal caught this, that or the other, it's fantastic because they're very clear, the audio, I can't remember the guy's name, but your colleague who is the presenter, and the graphics make it very clear exactly what's going on. It's a fantastic resource, isn't it?
Well, thank you very much for that. We hope it is, and that's surely what we aim at doing. We are actually trying to make it even more useful. serves by providing more and more videos and making the library sort of more important, but also by putting in place, I'm working on it actually tonight and likely the other nights of this week, a symptom checker.
Mm.
That people could access the website and type in a few symptoms, and we will suggest a list of potential disorders, and obviously for some of them we might have a video.
Yeah.
So people might not just check the videos randomly, but we might be able to direct them to the specific videos of interest to them. So that's what we are planning and doing, and hopefully we can have that live by next May. We're hoping within a couple of months.
Yeah, that again, that's very useful, because I know from my own dogs, usually when you know, they get a stomach upset, or one of our dogs has had problems with her paws, and it's usually, you know, after hours and the vet's shut, and it's not an emergency, but I would like to have some input as to what it could be. So to have that site to go to and sort of have a symptom checker is brilliant. I really like that.
Absolutely, and maybe I should precise here that our goal is not to bypass or shunt, you know, the classical veterinary channels at all.
Mm.
You know, our website is, you know, to be used by people who just want to, you know, have some general information about dog health.
Mm.
But also, you know, if they've been to the vet and they come back and they're not too sure about what's going on, they check out the name of the disease and they can sort of get different information or more precise information or a different angle on their dog's disease.
Yeah.
You know, if the vet said, well, I suspect the dog, your dog has tetanus, for example,
mm.
I believe that even though you've been to the vet and the vet already made a presumptive diagnosis, to watch that video can be useful to actually see whether actually it really is or not.
Mm-hmm.
One of the problems I've got in my daily job is that I would see animals for, you know, 5 to 15 minutes. When people actually live with their pets, you know, and have, you know, very, very long contact with them.
Mm.
And my clients, I've got, you know, the great opportunity to visualize my patient's symptoms for much longer.
Mm.
And that's where I think that to provide them with sort of the visual tools to analyze their dog's behavior and symptoms can be of a great help for the vet himself.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And as you say, sometimes, I mean, I've had it myself when I've been to the vet and they've explained to me, you know, and they've been very helpful, but perhaps I was, you know, surprised at what they were saying and I was worried about the dog, or, you know, I'm controlling the dog. And I get home and I'm thinking, oh, did they say, you know, what exactly did they say? So to have this to go and look at, it's just another help and a reassurance, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, mm. The internet is very rich of, you know, various sort of data sheets about various disorders that dog may have and so on. But to bring it in a video format,
mm.
is, I think, sort of a little bit better.
Yeah, yeah. Now, the other thing that I'm very interested in, because I do think if you give people, you know, a way to support one another, you know, pet people and dog people, they will rally to a cause and they will help support one another. And you want to sort of facilitate meetings between people and sort of get them together to support one another if their animals suffer from the same conditions, don't you?
Absolutely. So following sort of the symptom checker to enable people to get access to more specific videos, our next goal, our next target would be to create an online community rather than like the Facebook or MySpace community, but for pet owners. And especially those who have got sort of a vested interest in animal health. So let's say you own a dog that suffers from diabetes. We are going to allow you to meet with other pet owners, you know, that suffer from, you know, sort of that have got to deal with a dog suffering from diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
And this way, we hope that you know, you would be able to exchange sort of tips and you know, to basically go along with that condition and make it easier. Again, you know, the experience that your veterinarian will have is one, but the whole community of pet owners that have got to deal with an ongoing condition will have to deal with very, very specific problems that maybe the vets, you know, we won't have a clue about. You know, if you know, how do you do when the dog doesn't want to eat? You know, with a specific condition, and so on. So I believe that this could be sort of an interesting tool to, you know, put people together that do have a very similar problem to deal with on a daily basis.
Yeah, yeah, excellent. I do think it's a brilliant website. Just so people are sure where to go to. How do they find your website? What's the address?
The address is www.vetstoria.com. So it's V-E-T, like vet, and Storia, S-T-O-R-I-A, like a story. Vetstoria.
Jane Ayrton and Tony Sherritt from Trovacoats were at Crufts with lots of news, including that they've been doing some filming for a television series.
Yes, it was quite interesting, really. Before Christmas, ITV1 got in touch with me and said, we're doing a programme on Manchester Dogs Home. They've got 500 dogs there, which are going to need to be rehomed. They're going out, working with street people. They're doing fantastic work in the community. We just would like to give them some coats and beds to help them on their way. Well, of course, Tony and I just couldn't resist it.
Yeah.
And we got on really well with these people, and the programme really started going well. So I got on really well with the producer. We sent the coats and beds, and the next thing was that I found myself saying to her, well, if you find a little dog that is so ugly, we need a company mascot, so ugly that nobody will have him, please will you let me know? So I get this email that says, we have a little Staffy Cross who nobody will take because he has a hair lip. He's been here for 4 months. He's an absolutely fantastic character. Absolutely no pressure.
Yes, I can imagine, yeah.
Well, the long and the short of it was that I said yes, and then thought, I live in the Channel Islands, and this dog is in Manchester. How am I going to get him there? But what I didn't know, when they phoned me the next day and told me, what they didn't know was that this dog they'd been following since they picked him up off the streets in Rochdale. And they said, would I mind if they sent a camera person and Hairlip, as he was called then, and the man from Manchester Dogs Home to Alderney? So, pausing slightly and thinking, my goodness, this is my lucky day, I said, yes, we'd be very happy.
Yeah.
So Trover, as he is now called, of course, being the company mascot, arrived with Manchester Dogs Home man, Colin, absolutely lovely, of course, and the camera lady. And he stepped off the plane, and you could see him think, I can hack this. We took him down on the beach. This is the dog that's been in a 4x4 kennel with three other dogs for several months. It was just brought tears to your eyes, didn't it?
Yeah.
He was in the sea. He was thinking, ah, sand? Yes, I can do that. Seaweed? Yes, I can do that. And this is the most beautiful dog you can imagine. Okay, he's got a hair lip, but he's got the most fabulous character. He's chewed almost everything in the house.
He's marking it, is he?
Absolutely. I've already got two rescue dogs who are a bit hinge and bracket about the whole affair, but they're coming round.
Yeah.
And he has just changed all our lives for the better. And what I want to make sure people realise is that you take on a rescue dog and you take on something wonderful. And he has got the most wonderful gait, hasn't he, Tony? Because you're a horse person, and he just walks beautifully.
Incredible movers. It's just in as much that he's a bundle of power, really.
Yeah.
And he's can't keep his feet on the ground.
Yeah.
He moves. If he were a horse, he'd be worth thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds because the way he moves is absolutely incredible. I'm sort of surrogate mum to James.
Well, it's always useful to have somebody that'll step in when you say, can you look after them for the day or the evening? Or
yes.
Have an auntie in the
place. Yes, yes. But he's so charming. I mean, what comes out of his expression, and he looks you straight in the eye, and there's this optimism, enthusiasm of life, and he says, let's just do it. How could anybody could have walked past him? I don't know.
I think that's the thing, when you look in their eyes and there's that trust, and it's, you know, you think you're giving them the second chance, they're giving you the second chance because, you know, they've been dumped and left, and they'll trust you again.
So we're very proud to have Trover as our company mascot, and he's doing us proud.
Good. And if you look on the website, there's pictures of Trover.
Absolutely.
Trover Coats also had an exciting announcement.
Trover Coats is absolutely delighted to announce that they are going to be bringing Dock Dogs, a huge canine water sport, from the US this year to various different shows all over the UK. And I'm really, really pleased to be able to introduce Grant Reeves, who's flown over from the States to just get the whole thing sewn up this weekend at Crafts. Yeah. So without more ado, I'd like Grant to tell us all about Dock Dogs.
Yes, because obviously it's just starting out here. So tell us, how is it going in the UK, in the US?
Dock Dogs is actually going very, very well in the United States. It is the fastest growing canine sport over there right now. And we do somewhere around 100 to 115 different events a year already in the United States, with 25 different chapters that are clubs or affiliates and our national program. So it's growing very quickly.
So what is it about it that makes it so popular with dog owners?
You know, there's three things that make Dock Dogs the most popular program right now. First and foremost is we have a zero discrimination program, meaning any dog, any breed, any size from anywhere, as long as they conform to the local municipal bylaws, then you can bring your dog out. The second thing is you don't require a $15,000 or a $20,000 dog and hours of training to participate. You bring your dog right off the bed, and yes, we know everybody has their dogs on their bed at home. We've done that one already. You bring your dog right out and just have fun. And the third and the most important thing for us is it's a family sport. Husband, wife, mom, dad, the children, they can compete either with the same dog against each other, or they can compete with multiple dogs against each other. The third thing for Dock Dogs is it's the most fun that you're going to have with your dog. It's absolutely an incredible time with your dog, and dogs get so addicted to it.
Yeah. I mean, we saw it last year, and the dogs that are doing it and the people that are doing it have fun, but you can have fun just watching. I mean, but first of all, tell us what it is. What does it actually involve?
What Dock Dogs is, we have three disciplines in the United States. We have the Dock Dogs Big Air, which is the long jump for dogs. We have Dock Dogs Extreme Vertical, which is the high jump for dogs, where we jump up into the air and they grab a bumper out of the air, and they're jumping all the time into the water. And then we introduced a new sport called Dock Dogs Speed Retrieve, which is a timed event where they run, jump, swim, and it's a timed event. In the UK this year, our series that we're going to be executing with over five events will strictly focus on the big air, which is the long jump, but we're also going to have demonstrations for the other two sports.
Sounds great. So where can people find out where these demonstrations will be?
DockDogs.com. Just click on the home button on the DockDogs.com page and look under DockDogs UK, and you'll see the five events. And they're starting, actually, the first one is the last weekend of April, and we run consistently through till July.
And I guess if anybody sort of is thinking, well, shall I or not, you know, is my dog too old or too young or too big or too small?
Six months is the minimum age requirement for the dog. They have to be 6 months or older. But we have 13-year-old golden retrievers that jump all of 2.5 feet, but they love it. And it you literally can see it in the dog that, you know, this is a 13-year-old dog, but he's acting like a puppy. And, you know, there's zero discrimination. It doesn't matter what breed, what age, what size. Just come out and have fun.
We were talking about rescue earlier, and I think it's really important to point out that the world champion, who jumped in excess of 28 feet?
28 feet 10 inches, is a rescue greyhound. And here's something that's very key that people don't understand until they see it. If you took a greyhound and a Jack Russell, and we have both competing in Dock Dogs, and you had them step off the end of the platform or the jetty, the greyhound would win if you measured to the nose. We actually measure electronically to the tail set, where the tail starts to grow out of the spine. When that breaks the surface of the water, we mark that spot. The greyhound who holds the world record is a rescue greyhound, 28 feet 10 inches to the tail set. So that's actually about a 34-foot jump to the nose in a 40-foot pool off a 40-foot dock. It's an amazing thing.
Yeah, oh, right. Well, I can't wait to go and see some then.
It's absolutely fun to watch.
That was Grant Reeves, the CEO of Dock Dogs, talking there. It sounds great to participate in or watch, so if there's an event you can get to, do. A vast amount of space at Crufts is devoted to shopping, and we singled out a few interesting products to tell you about. First up, There are many devices that will track your dog, but the Retriever is marketed as the world's most advanced dog collar. I wanted to know just what makes it so advanced.
Okay, the dog collar has three aspects to it. It has some very sophisticated tracking technology, uses three-way tracking technology, which means it can be found inside, outside, and even underground to a certain extent. It has anti-theft features, so the collar is lockable. It will tell you if anyone tampers with the lock, it will send you a text alert. If anyone tries to cut the collar, it will send you a text alert telling you that someone's interfering with it. The collar is made of an anti-cut material, so it's very difficult to cut anyway. You can tell it if the to warn you if the dog moves from somewhere where it shouldn't do. So if you happen to have to leave it in a car, which I wouldn't recommend, but if you did happen to leave it in a car, you can tell it if the collar or the dog moves more than 20 yards, for example, it will wake up and text you, which means someone's either nicked your car or your dog. If it leaves your home, you can tell it to tell you that the dog has left home, so it can send you all sorts of alerts. And the third part of the collar is actually personal protection. It actually has a button on for the owner, so that if somebody's out in a remote location and they feel hurt or lost or threatened, then they can press this button and it will automatically send text messages to anyone you programmed it to, telling them where you are and that you're in trouble. So that's what the collar does.
That is a very clever collar, isn't
Thank
it?
You. And it's adjustable and lockable.
So is it adjustable? It will fit every breed?
The smallest we've got is a Border Terrier, up to anything larger than that, obviously, so you can go as big as you like. We are making a harness version for very small dogs, so we're doing that, and we're developing other products for other animals as well, but that's the dog world covered just about.
Now the thing that springs to mind, there's all this clever technology in it. Now I've got a Labrador and he's going to walk out into the pond. Is it going to ruin?
No, it's been produced to IP67, which means it can go swimming in it, you can smash it, it's dust proof, shock proof, all of those things. So we spend a lot of time with a design mechanical engineering company designing all the features to make sure that it can be used as a proper collar. You're not restricted as to where you take it. It has to be doggy proof, obviously, environment proof, waterproof, all of those things.
So it's obviously got GPS in there, as well as phone capabilities.
Yeah, it has three tracking technologies. It has GPS. The GPS we've split away from the main body of the product because typically GPS works best with some view of the sky. So if you just happen to thread it onto the collar and the GPS unit ended up under the dog's neck, it's pointing at the ground, it's protected, so in the places where you're most likely to lose a dog, it won't work properly. So the GPS is actually now part of the buckle, so it will almost always point at the sky, with gravity taking care of that. It has GSM mobile phone technology built into it. That acts as two things. It allows you to locate the device, but not particularly accurately. So the telecoms companies will tell you it's about 300 metres. It could be anything from 300 metres and upwards, but it gives you a starting point. But it's also used, obviously, for the device to transmit its location. But it also has radio frequency tracking technology on board, which helps you find it indoors and underground as well. So the combination of the three should give you a pretty good chance of finding anything wherever it happens to be. Yeah, we have a particular device, a handheld tracker, which you can buy, which combines all three inputs. So it takes in the phone signal, the GPS signal, and the RF. The RF you then use as a directional finder, so it will take you direct to it. Obviously, the GPS, it just plots the coordinates and tells you how far to walk and in which direction to head off.
Okay. And as you say, you program the collar to alert you or whoever you want to alert.
The collar comes ready to use. We're aware that some people are a bit technophobic, There are various states that you can use the collar in. It comes plug and play, if you like. You can put it on your dog. It'll work. There's a call centre. If your dog goes missing, if you don't want to do anything, you can just call the call centre. You can actually get everything sent to your phone. So a combination of things sent to your phone, including an address, GPS coordinates, or if you have a GPS-enabled phone, you will actually be able to use your phone as the tracker to find the device using the maps on your phone. At that sense, it obviously is fairly user-friendly, but also there are thousands of different ways you can set the device up. So you can make it as sensitive as you like, you can get it to trigger all sorts of alarms, everything from how far away from you it roams to if it leaves home, if the battery's running low, if it's in somewhere where you don't want it to go, if it's somewhere where you do want it to go. You can get it to advise you if it moves from where it is. And all of this, and we've actually got a system that also combines or increases the battery life up to 3 months before it needs recharging, which is, compared with a lot of products which tend to be a couple of days, a significant enhancement on that as well.
Excellent.
We're not selling yet. It will be available for sale in probably about 6 months, but we are trialling it at the moment just to make sure that it hangs together and it obviously doesn't let anyone down, so that's very important. It will be available in the US. It has global coverage. It will work globally. We expect the price to be in the region of £200, somewhere between £170 and £200. It will definitely be available in the US, but probably not till later in the year. We obviously want to make sure that the platform and everything's very stable, all the various technologies, the combination of technologies, and the robustness of the product as well. But we're just acutely aware that in this form, it's a dog collar, and it has to be able to deal with being pulled, pushed, scratched, submerged, all of those things before we make a great release of it. So the thing is, we are. I mean, one of the things we're doing here, we were here last year gaining a whole load of information, and we're doing much the same now. But we are looking for people to test. We will be selling some beta trial units at a much reduced price just to get feedback, because whilst we can test them to our heart's content, you're only going to know if there are 500, 1,000 units out there with everyone doing things to them that, quite frankly, we couldn't imagine. So there is that available to people as well.
Well, I mean, when you think about sort of how much we love our dogs,
yeah,
and how much some of them cost in the first place,
sure,
apart from anything else, you know, £200,
yeah,
isn't that much, is it?
No, I think that we've taken the view on this that what we're trying to protect are things that you can't put a cash value on. If you're after your £400 back, you can already get your dog insured. That's what insurance does. The object of this exercise is to get your dog back, or your pet, or your horse, or whatever it happens to be, but to get that back, which is why we've taken the view that we will do it properly. And we've come at it very much from the dog view. So rather than look at the technology and think, how can we use this technology, we've sat down for, 18 months now and talked to various charities and dog organisations, thousands of dog owners, to ask what they wanted and then come up with the technology to do it. And I think that gives us a better chance of delivering what people want. I appreciate even at £200, it's probably still beyond some people's budget, but given the things it does, unfortunately that's probably where we're going to be. But you're absolutely right, given the cost of dogs, but also the emotive value that dogs have for people. If it is a concern, and you know, whether it's for loss or dog theft, and I don't want to be a scaremonger about dogs, because I think the facts are that not that many dogs get stolen. But in the same way that not many children get abducted, children do get abducted and dogs do get stolen. And it is a real worry for people. So, and our product does address it.
So now you have keeping track of your dog covered. But what about when you bring him home with dirty paws? We spoke to Brianne Leary, who has developed a product to deal with just that problem.
Well, you know what? It's been a 2-year journey from idea to now being a year in the United States and now just launching here in the UK, which is huge for us. And Mel and Mike have been amazing. I basically, you know, I got this wonderful Wheaton Terrier named Lulu, who they start out being a brown spot, you know, about half a foot long, and then they grow to be this giant white spot, you know, 45 pounds. And I live across the street from Central Park. And so I have an apartment there, which is lovely, but then my dog Lulu loves to run and play in the park, and I was was literally having to physically pick her up and carry her into the bathroom to wash her paws every time I came home. And I said, oh my gosh, there's got to be something I can do, because this is crazy. And you can't leave a bucket at the landing in your apartment, because, you know, it looks really tacky. And the wipes don't work, in my opinion. They're not thorough. And the boots Lulu hated. Like, what is that with the boot thing? So I literally had always had an idea kind of in the back of my mind, like how you wash a golf ball on a golf course, or how you do that nail polish remover thing.
Yeah.
You put your fingers in. So I thought, God, there's got to be a concept, a way to do that. And so I called a friend of mine who's really one of those genius guys that if you give him a paper clip, he'll build you the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah.
And so he sort of helped me build the Eiffel Tower with the paw plunger. I said, you know, it needs to go to the dog's paw. It needs to have a seal a bit. And I wanted to have brushes so it gets in the thing. Blah, blah, blah. I said, he'd never been to a golf course. I said, go to a golf course, look at that. I said, go to a drugstore and look at the nail polish things and let's talk. So it took us about a week, different drawings, little fitzing. Then we did a patent pending ourselves and then started, and we found an investor right away. So then we hired a patent attorney. So we actually just got the U.S. patent 3 months ago. So that was huge.
Yeah.
And now the international patents are all like, you know, kind of clicking forward. And we were so excited. We'd done very well in the U.S. And we met Mel and Mike, our U.K. distributors here. And it was through serendipity. They called and they said, oh, they wanted one for their dogs. And I said, oh, it's going to cost too much to ship to the U.K. It'll cost more than the paw plunger costs. They said, well, actually, you know, we're going to Florida. And I said, oh, that's easy. We'll still ship it to Florida. I'll give you the address. And then he calls back. Mike calls back and says, oh, are you interested in distributing? I said, yeah, we see, absolutely, in the UK. So I said, we'll just send you one. If you like it, don't even pay for it. If you like it, let us know and we'll start talking. And within a week, this was in November, and so now here we are, March.
Yeah.
So we're here at the official launch at Crufts, which is huge, and they've just done some great stuff, and I think we're getting a terrific turnout. I mean, this is only the second day, and so it's just huge that we're here, and each day the sales are more and more, and it's, you know, you sort of have to educate the consumer, because it is about, you know, it's a whole new concept.
So what happens? I get back with my muddy, dirty dog.
Oh, you get back with your muddy, dirty dog. So actually, it's a little big cup. Actually, it's like a giant beer mug. And it's got a brush insert. And you literally bring the cup with the brush insert with water in it to the dog's paw. You plunge it a couple times. And then you dry it off and bing, bang, bang. A job that could take, 20 minutes, and it's really annoying and everyone's unhappy. It takes about 5 minutes once you get used to it at the door and you're done.
Now, excellent. Now, the other thing is, what size of dog?
Oh, this is a good question. Right now, we had the one for medium to large dogs. So it's about 20 pounds to literally 120 pounds. There was an Irish wolfhound that I could have ridden today, and his name was Lancelot.
Oh.
And I'd never seen him before, and I used the paw plunger on him, and he was just fine, and it fit. So it's huge.
Brilliant.
We're making the small medium, which should be available in April or May.
I would love that.
Freeze. Yes, yeah, exactly. The little ones. And then we're literally making the paw plunger petite.
Oh.
Because at first I thought, you know, these little dogs, give them a Q-tip. I mean, honestly.
Oh, no.
No, exactly. So we're going to make the little one and maybe even, you know, bling it up a bit with Swarovski crystals and that kind of thing.
Yeah, good idea.
So that'll be fun. So it's, you know, it's sort of really happening. And I think also next year we'll probably launch Lulu Lifestyle, which are all natural products. You know, I sort of market my dog Lulu as the Martha Stewart of the dog world. And so it's, you know, we're really going. I mean, it's whoosh, you know, we've got from idea to now, it's been 2 years. So it's, I'm exhausted.
I bet.
But I'm happy as a clam.
Well, the best of luck with it.
Oh, well, cheers. Thank you for being so sweet. Thank you so very much. And happy plunging.
Well, now our dogs are safe and clean, they just need to be entertained. Roger Mugford's Company of Animals has some great new canine puzzles.
The biggest enemy for happiness in a dog is boredom, being left alone. But actually, just toys like Kong, of course, are very helpful. But what about when you're at home and interactive toys that require the dog to do something with you together, just as a mother and child would? Well, these are toys invented by a Swedish lady called Nina Ottosson, and they're interactive toys. So you have to go and create puzzles for the dog to solve, which the dog is well able to do. So they're made in MDF hardwood, basically, dogs find it really very exciting. And I have to say, a degree of mental effort is as exhausting as any physical effort. Mm-hmm. So we all think dogs need exercise, but it's what they do during their exercise that really matters from a welfare standpoint. Just using their mind and their paws and their jaws to creatively solve a puzzle is actually quite exhausting for the dog. And clearly, these dogs from Claire Guest cancer dog detection dogs are highly trained to solve puzzles. We want pet owners at home to really apply the same philosophy to their dog. You can hide slippers and go find a slipper. You can hide a banana, a toy, which they have to use their brain and their nose to solve that problem. They don't all have to detect cancer. But these Nina Odison toys are part of the challenge that we need to give up. Pet dogs.
Yeah. I just think when you said that, we sometimes if it's been a rainy day or whatever, you know, and we can't take Bud out that much, we've played, you know, we've hidden a toy and he's gone and found it, and you do that several times, and you're absolutely right. At the end, he's like, oh, I'm exhausted now, I need to sleep. Yeah. And it's not until you've seen it in your own dog, you think, you know, he's as exhausted as if we'd walked him.
So any office worker who comes home, sitting in a chair the whole time, compares their life with a forest worker or, someone doing hard physical work. Who's the more tired? Probably the office worker.
Yeah.
So.
And sort of, can you give us an idea of what kind of activity, you know, what the puzzles actually would be?
Some of these puzzles require using the nose, so scent detection. Others require a push with the nose, a lift with the teeth. They have to remove a little wooden block, or they drag a little door, a trap door, with their paw. So they're all different parts of the body to solve the different elements of the challenge.
And now to continue your entertainment, it's the Dogcast Radio News.
Hello and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Kate.
And I'm Nick. There are many ways to break the law with your dog, but a bizarre one was highlighted recently in Boulder, Colorado, in the USA. A hairdresser has fallen foul of a 30-year-old law by dyeing her poodle pink. Joy Douglas regularly used egg whites mixed with beets to turn the naturally white fur of her toy poodle Cece pink. And she liked to use her eye-catching dog to raise breast cancer awareness. However, when animal control officers noticed Cece's pink fur, they applied an old ordinance banning the dyeing of any animals. In a worst-case scenario, Joy could face a $1,000 fine and 90 days in jail, but she insists she has not mistreated her dog at all. As news of the position Joy finds herself in has spread, more donations than usual have been made to her breast cancer fund, and she hopes to use her court appearance to raise even more money. For every person who turns up to the court dressed in pink, Joy will donate $1 to the Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Foundation.
Let's just hope the judge doesn't see red. Now to a dog down under who saved the life of a baby kangaroo. When out for a walk with his owner in South Australia, Rex, a German short-haired cross, spotted a kangaroo that had been knocked down by a car. Both Rex and his owner, Leonie Allen, passed by the all-too-common sight. However, later in the day, Leonie noticed that Rex was assuming a pointing position that canines of a gun dog heritage can use to indicate something of interest. Leonie was concerned that Max might have spotted a snake and called him to her, but when he returned, he deposited a baby kangaroo, or Joey, at her feet. The Joey was about 4 months old and seemed affectionate towards the dog that must have pulled it from its dead mother's pouch. Many Joeys whose mothers are involved in road accidents die of injuries or being unable to fend for themselves alone. Thanks to Rex, though, this young marsupial is now being hand-reared at a wildlife sanctuary until it is old enough to be released back into the wild.
So maybe Rex should be jumping for joy at having saved a kangaroo's life. It's always heartwarming to hear of dogs in need of a new home who finally find the place for them, and a stray dog in India recently found his niche in life. On Marina Beach in Chennai, for several days, the homeless dog had been following police officials patrolling the beach to ensure the safety of people swimming in the sea. When the police patrol members shouted at bathers to leave the sea, the dog barked at them. Eventually, the dog plunged into the sea and chased the errant swimmers out and has now been adopted by the patrol. It's a happy ending all round because the dog now has a home and a job, and the beach will be a safer place, which is great, bearing in mind that in 2007, over 1,500 swimmers drowned. The other strays on the beach will also be considered for adoption and training with the team.
Interestingly, the first canine member of the beach patrol has been given the same name as our host of Dogcast Radio, Julie. And talking of names for dogs, According to research conducted by Veterinary Pet Insurance, the top 10 male dog names are Max, Buddy, Rocky, Bailey, Jake, Charlie, Jack, Toby, Cody and Buster. While for female dogs, the top 10 is Bella, Molly, Lucy, Maggie, Daisy, Sophie, Sadie, Chloe, Bailey and Lola. This highlights the fact that many dog owners are choosing to give their dogs human names rather than specifically pet names. So, if you're struggling to find a name for your dog, the VPI Pet Insurance website has some great tips.
But, of course, do bear in mind that your dog's name is something that will be with you for a long time, and that you'll have to say it in public time and time again. Well, that's all from us at the Dogcast Radio News Desk. Goodbye.
I hope you've enjoyed our Crufts coverage. Next time, we have an interview with Ted Kerasoti about his book, Merle's Door. It's a fascinating book and a great interview. So until then, while I'm off to gargle with something for my throat, you look after yourselves and your dogs.
Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121-288-0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
Okay, what do you get when you cross a...
Cock-a-poodle-doo.
Yes, that's what you said, doesn't it?
Is it cockle? I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, is it?
What do you get if you cross a dog and a chicken? Or
is it recording?
Yeah.
Oh. What do you get if you cross a dog and a chicken? A cockapoodle-doo.
Okay. Closer.
What do you get if you cross a dog and a chicken? A cockapoodle-doo. A cock a do you read it? A cock a poodle do.
Go on, one more time.
A cock a poodle.
Cock a poodle do. Cock a poodle do. Like a cock a doodle do. Cock a poodle do.
What did you do? How do you say it normally?
A cock a doodle do. Cock a poodle do.
A cock-a-poodle do. What?
Hold the joke.
What do you get if you cross a dog and a chicken? A cock-a-poodle.
Come on.
A cock-a-poodle do.